This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, the business masterclass for the next hour. First half hour, business skills conversation, and it's all about talent pipeline and talent management with Charles Kutzer from USB Ed. And of course, in the studio, Alice Nyandu, my friend, and Richard Angus, also a friend, and we're going to just talk about business the next hour. Richard, over to you and our special guest, Charles Kutzer. Welcome, Charles.
Thank you so much.
I'll leave you in Richard's capable hands, and I'll just interrupt every now and then.
Charles is a psychologist, right?
An industrial psychologist, yeah.
Jeez, I wish I could ask him about voter psychology after our last conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, who knows, eh?
Yeah, I was going to say.
The biggest mystery.
Yeah, so Charles is a registered industrial psychologist with 12 years of experience, so we hope that that's going to help us get through today. Mm-hmm. He spends some time, you're with Basil Reed at the moment, if I remember.
That's right.
Correct. And you're also a member of the part-time faculty with the University of Stellenbosch Executive Development Company.
Yes.
Correct. Okay, so what we wanted to talk about is this whole question of talent management, because we talk about entrepreneurs and what they need and the assets that they need in their business to get businesses going. But ultimately, I always love the expression, because I have this happen to me. We always say people are your most important assets. And then I always do the quick accounting test to say what is the definition of an asset. And there's a long technical term, but one of the key points is you've got an asset is something that's controlled by the business. Mm. And whenever I do this test with any group of people, I always point out to them that people stopped being assets when slavery was abolished. But needless to say, people are a critical asset within your business.
Marco Tafani, sorry to interrupt you, Marco Tafani, who now runs Anglo-American, told me one day, he'll never use that. He'll never say people are your most important assets. They are the heart of the business. And he hates pairing with assets, you know, that whole debate.
Yeah. So I think the question of today of, you know, talent management and managing your pipeline of talent within your business is such a critical one and very important in any business's life. I mean, let's start off. I mean, what is talent management? I mean, if we say the word talent management, you know, everybody immediately has some image that's conjured up. I can see Ellis is thinking of talent on the human resources or talent walking down the runway. Okay. So what is talent management there?
Yeah, I think in a nutshell, basically talent management is nothing else than preparing your capacity and your capability of people for the current and future business needs. So like Adrian said, that business is all about people. So to have the right people in the right positions in order to execute your strategy in the future. I think in a nutshell, that's talent management.
Okay, so there were two key things that I heard in that statement, and that was the right people in the right positions. Now, I'm reminded of Jim Collins's book, Good to Great, where he talks about the business as being a bus, and he talks about having the right people on the bus and then having the right people that are on the bus sitting in the right seats on the bus, you know, the right driver, the right conductor, the right passengers in the right space, etc. So I guess talent management is about that, so right people in the right place. So let's talk a little bit about, so why is it important? I mean, why is this so critical in your mind in terms of getting this right?
Yeah, I think you can have the best vision, the mission, the strategy of a company, but without talented people, that vision cannot become reality. So you need talented people that, like you rightfully said, aligned their own passion and purpose in life is aligned with the business objectives and the purpose of why the business exists. And if you can do that alignment correctly in terms of your recruitment and selection, then to retain a talent is quite easy to do as well. So I think if we talk about what's the importance of talent management, employee turnover is a cost to any company. So it can vary between 15% to 150% of an employee's annual salary is the cost to replace someone. If you take into account recruitment costs, advertising costs, psychometric assessments, onboarding, training and development, and so forth. So it can be a huge cost to if you have a high employee turnover. So
the cost of early on mistakes, I mean, you know, just getting them confident in what they're doing.
Absolutely. Not even if you consider all the customer service or productivity loss in getting a new employee on board and so forth, and the climate and culture change, let's say you need to recruit a new leader for all the employees to adopt to that new leader. Mm. So employee turnover can be costly. So in old days, recruitment was done on a reactive basis, where nowadays with talent management is done on a proactive basis to see how can we predict what we require in the future, mm-hmm. and how can we align employees and get them ready to be in those positions when you need them.
Mm. Now you make an interesting comment there about recruitment being proactive, because for me, that means that you've A, got the concept of, let's call it, a talent pool that you then apply to the various roles, or let's go back to the analogy, seats on the bus. So, you know, in the example, I guess the question is, do you always have a second driver of the bus available when the first one perhaps decides to leave or something happens? I guess my question around, you know, the talent pool is, when should you have a talent pool? How big should the talent pool be? Because there's also something weighing in the back of my mind going, well, that might sound fine and well. The guy driving the bus right now is very happy. But the guy who wants to be the driver and isn't the driver right now, how's he feeling in this talent pool? How do you manage that little nuance?
Expectation.
Absolutely. Very good question. And I think that's maybe one of the trends of talent management. So in the past, we talked about talent pipelines or pools, where a pipeline you have a one first successor, second one, and so forth. But I think with a new concept, we can rather move away from talent pools and talent pipelines to talent fountains. So what we mean by that is, let's take, for example, if you build a talent pipeline to replace a CEO, you'll have one or two successors in order to fill that position in the future. But with a talent fountain, all the executive members can fill that role at any time. They are on that level that they can even rotate that position in the present. Mm. So you equip and you develop everyone, mm. not just only certain employees, if that makes sense.
I remember at some point in my corporate past, we had this debate about, you know, who steps in when the CEO's not available. And we had one particular incident where the executives were all traveling away together. And I joked with the head of HR, because both him and I weren't on that particular going away at that particular time. And I joked with him at the time. I said, if something happened to this particular group while they were away, him and I were going to ching for the corner office to see who was going to run the organization until we got things sorted. And it was this big toss-up, you know, the debate, HR or finance running the show. And I think most people were uncomfortable with both. Yeah. running the show. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, you're talking of a talent fountain, so to speak. How else is talent management practiced in practical terms today?
Yeah, I think talent management starts with you need to identify your talent needs. So what are your current talent needs in terms of scarce skills that are difficult to replace at the moment? What are your core skills? Those skills that generates revenue, and your critical skills, those positions that drives your vision and your mission and your strategy within your business. So what are your talent needs, let's say, in the next 2 or 5 years, if you take into consideration your growth of your business, your current employee turnover rates, your retirements, and so forth, and you plot that into a workforce plan, a five-year plan, to see what are your supply and demands of people and talent and positions and so forth. And that's your starting point. The next phase is then you move into we're going to discover talent within your organization to see, do you have internal capacity in order to fill those positions, employees with potential and good past performance that you can grow into those positions in the future. And if not, you can go and align external talent and find and discover external talent in order to do so. Mm. After that, you need to grow talent. So you need to prepare them for those future positions, and then when they are ready and when the position becomes available, you need to successfully deploy them with a proper onboarding process and so forth.
Okay, so you've given us four things there very quickly. I want to explore those, but before we go there, Ellis had
I have a question for Cheryl. You know what gets me worried is the fact that I think a lot of our, maybe I'm wrong here, but I think I tend to be right, is that a lot of our talent management systems are too embedded within the industrial paradigm. Yet, we talk of the fourth industrial revolution, which basically is knowledge-based. So I'm interested to know from your view, how do we make the systems adapt to the change that's happening? Why? Because someone is talking about the role of a leader being to forget the past, manage the present, and create the future. And the future is now.
Absolutely. So, and you are quite right. Past performance won't necessarily predict future success because the world is changing. New technology, we live in a VUCA environment and so forth. So you need to continuously grow and develop people based on the context. So you need to know your context and you need to know what type of skills, personality, attributes and so forth do you require in order to be successful in that context and in your prediction in your mind in the future. What will be the context like in the future? And hopefully use those information in order to prepare your talent accordingly, if that makes sense.
Sure. Obviously, one also thinks about the fact that even the vocabulary that we use when it pertains to how we manage talent has to change. Not merely because we're talking about the prospect of robotics changing the game in terms of what happens, you know, whether you're a manufacturer of widgets and so forth. Would you agree that even the vocabulary at its basic sense has to change?
Yes, I think the perspective needs to change as well. So currently talent is only focused on a few employees that has the potential or the talent to become leaders. Where in my view, everyone is talented. You just need to align and find that talent and align it accordingly. So I believe each and every individual has talent. You just need to has a type and a form and some degree of talent. And you just need to align that accordingly.
Sure.
And therefore, your talent management needs to focus on all employees, not just certain employees.
Okay. So, Richard and Alison Scholl, I mean, that to me is the essence. You very quickly mentioned VUCA, and we've mentioned it before. Yeah, what are those four? What's the acronym stand for again? Volatile, is it?
Volatile, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity.
And ambiguity. Mm-hmm. So that, to me, is the essence.
Absolutely.
It's all good and well, the theory of developing a pipeline and people for the future position, when in actual fact the world is changing so fast. How do we actually, in essence, prepare our talent? You're busy putting someone on a program here, and while they're on this program in preparation for the next position,
The position changes.
The position or the elements around the position has changed. The requirements of that position, the pressure on that position, the world has changed, and it requires something different from that leadership position. I mean, gosh, so it's like a consistent, permanent.
It's the ocean.
It just keeps going. Wave it just keeps rolling. So I mean, surely this world of talent management has never been under more pressure than ever before in this VUCA world. That changes like never before.
Absolutely. Your people development and growth should be part of your DNA.
It should be in the now. It should be current. It
absolutely.
Should be like do.
And you, rather than put people on lengthy programs, make use of technology, e-learning, micro-learning, getting short courses into businesses, expert topics, workshop ideas, and so forth, where you can develop and grow people on a short term with bits and pieces of new information in combination with longer courses, degrees and so forth, in order to keep them up to speed with the current changes in the world as well.
And obviously, you know, the scary part is that as you do all this managing the pipeline and creating the fountains, you also have to be keeping the business thriving.
Yeah,
over the course of that process.
Yeah.
Because it might well happen that when the business flounders, that there's no use for that pipeline.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So that's just shows the complexity that leaders are dealing with.
And I think for me, that's one of the challenges, is that as the business goes through the pressures that it would do, that the pipeline requirements and let's call it the traits and the let's call it the value elements that you need might start shifting and shift quite quickly. And particularly in environments where for example, product environments change, legislative environments change, etc. Suddenly, you know, you find yourself, I mean, I'll never forget the, you know, people always said, well, what was the implementation of the NCA? What did that do to the world of banking? And everybody said, well, all the big banks should have been practicing good credit lending practices before the NCA. And everybody went, yes, and everybody nodded. But the reality was that there was a whole trail of compliance that was sitting behind the NCA that no one ever had to do before that. And all of a sudden, the compliance roles, if you had built a talent pipeline and ignored the NCA or thought that, you know, the NCA was building around, let's call it, process and the likes. Now, all of a sudden, you had all of these reporting requirements that you had to get to and people who had to understand all of this. And you were an organization that was actually fundamentally, let's call it, compliant in the spirit of the NCA before you, the NCA was even enacted. So, you know, all of a sudden, the pipelines and the talent pools started shifting phenomenally. I mean, I will never forget having the experience of having people internally within different divisions in an organization trying to steal each other's compliance officers because you had a better compliance officer than the division next door. So you started targeting people in other divisions. And I'm going, hold on a second, that's not exactly talent management. That's just flipping horse training, this one.
Talent theft, yeah.
talent theft. And I guess, and maybe also what I want to allude to here is it only big organizations that have to worry about this? I mean, you know, do Ellis and I have to worry about this in our little organizations or not?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, in my sense, if you are not there and you are on holiday and so forth, who will run your business for you?
So, Ellis, it goes on holiday with us, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it is that simple, actually. Yeah.
But let's say maybe an unfortunate event happens and you need people that can fill your role at any time. And that you need to be part as a leader. And I believe talent management is not a HR function, it's a leadership function.
I think there's such an important comment that you've just made there. Talent management is not HR's problem, and I always love, you know, people always used to say, did I have a problem with HR people? And my comment is absolutely not. HR people support a business leader, but how many times have I watched the guys in the business kind of go, I've got an issue here. Where's my HR consultant to fix the problem? And I'm going, but you've got the problem.
You're the leader.
You are HR. We used to have a saying. We used to say, you are HR, business leader or team leader or whoever it is.
Unit leader.
You manage your team. If you need support from the professional, well, be my guest. Ask, you know, get whatever support you need, etc. But don't think that you can shift your accountability to somebody else in the organization by saying,
"Yeah,
well,
but it's messy stuff, Richard.
Oh,
you have to deal with the paperwork
rules
and
no. You know what? Our experience was the biggest thing, and I guess it also features in the whole question of talent management, is that whole challenge of having an honest conversation with somebody about where things are actually at. So, you know, you may think that you're the bee's knees, but unfortunately, you're not. You try and have that conversation with somebody that is partially critical to the business, but maybe isn't the be-all and end-all of everything, yet they think they are. You know, I used to say there are people who at bonus time actually go campaigning for their bonus. You know, they like walk around the organization telling everybody how wonderful they are. And I used to think to myself, my goodness, you know, sometimes an honest conversation has to be held to say, look, you are a valuable member of the team, but understand where
you're not it.
Yeah. You're not it. And hell, business leaders don't like to have that conversation, Ellis. They're like, can I ask my HR consultant to have this conversation about the bee's knees?
So when I ask Shal, I mean, why don't line managers, leaders, take enough ownership of the talent pool, of making sure that I've got someone taking over from me? I think if you're a business owner, eventually that really hits you hard when you can't go on holiday without taking everything with you and so on. And the reality eventually hits home. But in the corporate environment, there might be an attitude of, well, I want to be valuable. You know, I don't want to make myself replaceable. I want to be irreplaceable. And then you've got a lot of other elements, indispensable.
Yep.
You know, that's where I want to be. So it's, you know, what kind of attitude? Why don't we see enough What do you think? It's convenient for me to abdicate that to HR. I can blame HR. And then in the end it never happens, and it suits me that it never happens, actually. I become indispensable. Where does it lie? Where's the psychology of this, Mr. Industrial Psychologist? Why don't line leaders take more proactive ownership of this important element?
Yeah, I think it's about a leadership perspective. So if I'm a leader and my perspective is people need to serve me, then I will use them as resources and assets. But if my perspective is that the employee is there to serve the customer and I'm there as a leader to serve and empower my employees
and to
serve
the customer. And to get the best out of them, you know, to take them on their journey.
Absolutely. Then my attitude towards people will change, because I know business is about people. My customer is a human being. My employee is closest to the customer. He or she is a human being. I need to find and activate talent. And if there's a misalignment with talent and they do not fit that position, then it's my task as a leader to find a suitable position where that person can add value with their particular talent or skill or attributes and so forth.
Mm. But Adrian, I think it's important too. I mean, I've been a line manager, so to speak, to realize that, you know, as a line manager, you also have the issue of, you know, driving the business objectives over and beyond just managing the people aspect, you know, seeing the revenues coming through, the sales are happening and things like that. Yet the view from a line manager's point of view is that I'm already doing enough, you know. So one has to weigh that. And it often is the case too that I think at the level of a line manager, you the context is often dissimilar to what, you know, say HR is working, you know, at the level that HR is working at. And that speaks to how large the organization is, what are the communication systems that make it very clear in terms of systemic communication within the organization, how that can be driven.
I guess it's a corporate management attitude versus a leadership attitude.
Absolutely. Now, I mean, research reports from several of the global consulting firms have identified talent retention as one of the top five challenges for CEOs. I mean, it's there, it's in different formats, but it's there all the time. I mean, what are organizations doing to retain talent? I mean, it's one thing to say, okay, we've got this talent pool, but I mean, if the pool has a hole and it keeps emptying, this is a problem. It's one thing to manage the pool, but if the pool keeps shrinking, what are we doing here?
Absolutely, and that's the beauty of talent fountains. It's self-sustainable. The motivation to stay with the organization is by intent, by purpose, not by external rewards or money or power and so forth. And I think to keep employees, you firstly, well, we can have 3 points: align them correctly, care for them, and grow them. So alignment is all about aligning your purpose and your passion in life, your attributes, your skills, competencies, and so forth with a purpose and the vision of the organization. Then that employee will motivate him or herself. It will take for yourself. There's each and every one of us has that one thing that motivates you in life that you really are passionate about. You will do it for Mahala, for free. So if you can align that energy with the positional requirements and the purpose of the organization, that employee will motivate himself. So it's like farming. You need to place the right seed into the ground. You need to care about that seed. In other words, give the water, the fertilizer, and so forth. So that's about creating the effective work environment in terms of managing the job demands and the job resources of that employee to sustain work engagement levels, and then to grow them, to grow talent and to activate talent. So you synergize individual talent to your business objectives.
I think Shao mentions a very important part here: engagement. You know, and often I think that's where organizations fail. So how does an organization keep people engaged beyond, over and beyond the salary? Because I think some of these studies, Richard, would agree, they've made this point that it's not often about the money. You know, how else then do you drive engagement?
I've often heard it said that people are motivated, or what drives people is one of three things: power, love, or money. And it's one of those three. And if something happens often, you know, an individual will have one of those three things that is their, let's call it their driver. And so, you know, some people will do something for the total love of it, regardless of the money and the power and status it gives them.
The mahala part.
Yeah, the mahala part. Other people will be totally focused. It's just about the cash flow. Other people will say, well, hey, you know, it's about the power, and I don't care what I get paid as long as I have the power and control over the situation. And sometimes power is not negative. Sometimes it's about power over my life, my destiny, whatever it may be.
To
make a difference. But I mean, I think, you know, understanding what the motivator is in that talent pool and in the individuals within the talent pool seems to be quite a critical part of getting this right.
Absolutely. So there's a famous, they call it the job demands, job resources model. Mm-hmm. And it's basically founded on to say your job demands is what is your physical demands, your emotional demands in a job. For example, you need to deal with a difficult customer or a difficult situation, even a difficult boss or whatever the case may be, and your cognitive demands, mental demands. So if my demands is quite high and challenging and I don't have the necessary job resources in place, then I will become burnout rather than work engaged.
You hate your job, in simple terms. You'll hate
absolutely
being at work. You'll hate going to work every
month. That hate word.
Absolutely. So work engagement is about... the definition of work engagement is you have high energy and high motivation levels. So if I provide you all the job resources, for example, I give you the supervisory support, you have your colleague support, you have constant performance feedback to say what did you do well, where can you excel, you have clear objectives, you find purpose in your job, you feel competent in your job, you feel you have all the physical resources sure. required in order to do your job. So all of those are job resources. So research tells us if you balance job demands and job resources, then that will enhance work engagement, and work engagement in return will decrease employee turnover, will enhance productivity, and so forth.
And so some of those resources, I imagine, can be non-tangible, you know, like providing someone with the space to make decisions, absolutely. To feel like they are in charge, like Richard was saying earlier.
Autonomy, yeah. Absolutely,
yeah, autonomy. Yeah.
The autonomy, the ability to make a difference, the ability to self-direct, all of these things drive how people behave and what they think about.
People's expectations are different now, aren't they, than 20, 30 years ago?
Yeah.
There was a time when, you know, just having a job is fine and I come to work and I just use my skill. Mm. Now I come to work with my brain and my heart, and therefore I expect my business to input into all three of those, help me develop my skills, help me develop my cognitive ability, I want to do an MBA, and help me to, I don't know, be happy and listen to my concerns and my issues and, you know, help me emotionally. So it's almost as though the more you give from the business point of view, the more people want in society, the more the employee wants, and the less they are happy. You find less and less passion in the workplace. You find less and less passion. And that's a big challenge, because a large part of that is my responsibility, my attitude towards life. And you can't really determine my attitude. So it's a very difficult space in which to meet halfway. The corporate doing what I can to invest in you, and you doing what you should. It's a two-way contract and relationship.
And I mean, I must say, I think sometimes I worry that organizations almost get a bit lethargic in this world of talent management, going, I've given so much, I've given. How much more must I give? And unfortunately, the answer is you have to give everything. And when you've given all of that, you have to give a little bit more.
Because you expect the heart, mind, and hands of that person at work.
Well, I often ask the question, and it goes to the heart, mind, hands. I ask, where's the soul?
Oh.
Okay, because it's really the soul that drives this type of stuff. The soul that's committed, the soul that's connected, the soul that's engaged will drive ultimately where this goes from a talent perspective. Just in closing, I mean, you've talked about the talent fountain. What are some of the other things that, let's call it modern talent management, what's out there from a modern talent management perspective that you can talk to us about?
Yeah, I think if one can use data and technology. So you have social media, you have software, you have virtual reality. So you can use all those tools in order to develop talent. For example, use virtual reality to build simulations. And you can simulate a job experience, and you can use gamification even.
I'm waiting for a virtual reality for the really bad performance review engagement.
But I think it's also important that this conversation does not end without us being realistic to say, whoever is listening, understand that the world of work is changing. You know, we talk of the talent pools, the talent pipelines, the fountains. We're going towards an era where companies may not need you. So, but that's a conversation for another day. We'll bring Carl back.
How do you talent manage the unneeded? This is an interesting question. I think, just in closing, I mean, the one thing that always scares me is that comment that says, we've got children at school today learning about, or learning in an environment where the jobs that they're going to have to do don't even exist yet. And I mean, that just scares me. I have a 12-year-old daughter, and I think to myself, you know, my 12-year-old is currently learning things at school that are going to be irrelevant for her job when she's 20.
Most of it, probably, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And learning in quotes, eh? Because for my 12-year-old, I think it's debatable how much of the learning is happening in the context of the change that you talk about.
Sure. Now, that's a whole new debate there. Thank you so much, Charles Kutzer. You're staying on. We're going to have an SME showcase, talking to a small, medium enterprise business owner or founder, partner. We, of course, the business masterclass is first about skills. So that's relevant in large and small businesses. But next up, we make it relevant to the small business environment. So stay with us. It is Brad Fordham, Director of Work Central. Interesting concept. There's a few of these concepts out there, but certainly where the world is going. And of course, we've got Richard and Alice and Shaul Kutzer of USB Ed. Stay with us.
This is CliffCentral.com.